Good evening. Happy holidays and welcome to the Council Connection for December. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. This is the time of year when we make plans to visit family and friends, and we'll be talking about that later on in the show. But first, let's look back on our fall convention, which was held on November 17th at the Carroll Center, and we'll begin by introducing everyone who attended.
I'm David Kingsbury, and I am from Stoughton.
Diane Fan from Quincy.
Jan DeRemus from Braintree.
Jessica Barr from Quincy.
Chris Devon from Quincy, and the president of the South Shore chapter of Bay State Council.
Bob Kirshner from Holbrook.
Joanne Kirshner from Holbrook.
Brian Coppola from Methuen, Massachusetts.
Mika Pikula from South Boston.
Claire Crow from Randolph.
Judy Faust from Stowe.
First time.
Wonderful.
I'm Linda Faust, first time. I live in Sudbury.
I'm Jennifer Harnish. I'm from Natick. I'm Secretary of Guide Dog Users of Massachusetts, and I'm also Director of Rehabilitation Training here at the Carroll Center.
Hi, I'm Deanne Elliott from Cambridge.
Hi, it's Angie Manderson. I was originally from out here. I live in Salem, Massachusetts.
Howard Sumner, Bedford, Mass.
Daisy Russell, Melrose, Massachusetts, President of Bay State Students and Director of Guide Dog Users of Massachusetts.
Diana Leonard, North Reading, Mass, and I'm also on the board for Bay State.
Josh Pearson, Amherst, Massachusetts.
Tyler Tarasi from Framingham.
I'm Bruce Howell, and oftentimes it seems like I live here, but when I'm not here, I live in Needham.
Lena Coral, from Chelmsford, but I'm currently living in Somerville.
Alice Lanou from Braintree, Mass.
Jeanette Kutash from Quincy, Mass, and I am Secretary of Bay State Boston.
John Smith from Quincy, Massachusetts, and Treasurer of Bay State Boston.
Ron DeMincy, Hyde Park, Massachusetts.
Ann Donna from Watertown, Massachusetts, President of the Charles River Chapter.
Ken Chernak from Natick, first time.
Bill Henderson from Dorchester.
Jeff Thompson from West Roxbury.
Elizabeth Ann Johnson from Cambridge.
Sharon Strakowski, Worcester, Massachusetts, and I'm the president of the Central Mass Chapter.
Mary Haroyan from Worcester and a member of the BSCB board.
Nona Haroyan, Worcester, secretary for the Central Massachusetts Chapter.
C.J. Posk from Worcester, and this is my first time.
David Morrison, Watertown, and coordinator for the MAB Peer Support Group, Watertown.
Nina Kagan, West Roxbury.
Frank Ventura, West Roxbury.
Sarah Wiles, Springfield, Massachusetts.
Ben Chase, Springfield, Massachusetts. I'm also secretary for ACB students.
Betty Soderholm, Needham.
Ellen Soderholm, Needham.
Roz Nadler, Arlington.
Rosemary Miller from Uptown Roxbury, and I'm also on the board of Bay State and the social director. Yay!
Bob Hache, Waltham, Massachusetts, Baylines editor.
Hi, this is Rick Morin. I'm originally from Springfield. I am the treasurer of Bay State Council.
Steve Dresser, webmaster, audio guy, and Council Connection host from Reading, Massachusetts.
You're listening to Council Connection, Talking Information Center Network.
For many of us, a smartphone has become an indispensable tool in our daily lives. We not only make calls, but we do email, we have our GPS, and for those of us who are blind or visually impaired, the phone gives us a way to actually see what's going on. IRA is one of the most innovative approaches to this kind of thing. And Marty Watts, the IRA representative, stopped by our fall convention to explain what it is and demonstrate how it works. Marty?
Thank you, everyone. IRA is a service that connects people who are blind or low vision to a live, trained, remote human agent using an app on your smartphone in about 5 or 10 seconds. And so you open the IRA app, you tap one button, and in roughly 5 to 10 seconds, that agent comes online. They see the live streaming view from your smartphone's camera And their job is to do one thing, and that's to give you instant access to any visual information. So it could be in the context of using Aira to navigate this campus if you've never been here, to go for a walk and to have your surroundings described. It could certainly be to find rooms on campus, to read material. We've had people put furniture together and fix appliances. Any and anything where you might rely on sighted assistance, the Aira agent then becomes your personal on-demand sighted assistant. So the same way that OnStar works in cars, where you push that button and the operator is there, you open the Aira app and you tap that same button and the Aira agent comes online and is there to basically describe that scene at hand. So here, let's make a call to the Aira agent.
Connecting to agent. Thank you for calling Aira. This is Joanne. Hi, Marty.
Maybe they'll have a solid connection this time. Joanne, can you do you have video?
I can hear you and I can have good video.
Great. So why don't you just tell us what you see?
So you're standing at one end of a large rectangular room, or a little bit longer than a square. I see there's very high ceilings, vaulted ceilings. There's a clock on the wall on the other side of the room, up above what looks like a door. And then along that wall in the back, there are a bunch of pictures hanging there. They look like actual photographs that are up on the wall. There are two to three rows of round tables that go one, two, three, at least three deep. They're all round. They have chairs around them. So there are three rows that go back that have round white tables at them. Looks like there's about, 40 people in the room. There's a door that goes out on the far left corner of the room. There are another door on the right wall. And I can describe some of the people at the tables if you want.
Joanne, are you able to see, are there any Patriots or Red Sox fans in this audience right here?
Let me see. I'm going to guess, based on your GPS location, that there are a lot of Red Sox or Patriots fans in that room.
Thank you, Joanne.
You're welcome.
Great. So, does anyone have a question for Joanne for this Aira agent we have on the line?
Hi, this is Josh Pearson from Amherst, Massachusetts. I wonder if you could describe one of the photos. Let me know what time the clock says, and also let me know, the most innovative thing that you've had to describe or do for somebody.
So, just to repeat his question, he wanted to know what the pictures on the back wall were and the time on the clock?
Yes.
One second. I took a picture of the back wall through the app. They are pictures of people, it looks like. Some are people outside in the snow with jackets, it looks like. There's a sign on that back door that says no entry. And the time on the clock says, which is not correct, it says 10 minutes of, oh no, it says 10, almost 10 o'clock, it is correct. So 9:58 or so.
Great. And the most innovative task you've ever been asked to help an Aira Explorer achieve.
Wow, innovative. So I guess every day we have the ability to remote into people's computers through a program called TeamViewer. And so every day I learn something new about a program that I've never used. So it might be a Braille program, like making a regular text document into a Braille document. I've helped an explorer do that before. They know the process, but they can't see to click and on the different boxes. So they just sort of walk me through it, and I click on the boxes and help them create those things. any program that requires them to use a mouse to select an area, you know, we help with that. Innovative. I'm trying to think of innovative because I love the everyday tasks. I love helping people with just being more independent and not having to wait on somebody to read the mail or wait on somebody to read the directions on the back of the microwavable meal or just to help a parent read a book to a child at bedtime or help them assist with homework, things like that. I love those tasks.
Thank you, Joanne. If we have any other questions, we'll make sure that we call you back. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Take care. So IRA agents are all across the country. They work from home. They often have second jobs. I happen to know Joanne. She lives in Bangor, Maine. So we have a widely distributed model, and agents go through a very extensive screening and training process. And so you're talking to someone that is an expert in communicating with people who are blind or low vision. And regardless of who picks up your call, you're going to experience that same level of service, which is just a calm, clear speaking voice, the intrinsic skill of being able to describe literally anything, and just someone that has the power of the internet at their fingertips that can find what you need when you need it. David, you said that you had a question?
Yeah, well, I will say it, and then you can say it. When you pick, when you designate a zone as a free zone, like Carroll Center here,
sure.
What are like the boundaries? Is it just the building?
So it's what are the boundaries when we turn on a geographic fence for an IRA access location? So it would basically be the bordering streets. So it's as broad a stroke as we can capture. So that regardless of where you'd be roaming on this property, while probably right not now in the snow, certainly in springtime, so that you can truly explore. And really that's, I think, an area of growth that I think would interest most people is that if you download the IRA app and register as a guest, there's a growing number of free IRA access locations. And so what we announced this week was that IRA is in all 9,560 Walgreens stores across the country. So you can enter Walgreens and shop to your heart's content completely by yourself. What we announced a few months ago was we launched service in all 98 Wegman stores. So IRA is looking for locations that are likely places where you would use sighted assistance or use IRA, but not have to use any of your personal plan minutes. We also announced this week that we brought our first stadium on board. So we're in Dallas Cowboys Stadium. So I think that hopefully will turn the heads of people maybe at Gillette or at Fenway. So I think just expect IRA to continue to bring more locations on at as fast a pace as we can possibly move. There's a question in the back I see there, in the very back table.
Yeah, I'd like to know if the agent has ever done the whole thing where you're helping somebody pick things off of a shelf in a store. I was impressed when I saw the announcement this week about the Walgreens thing that Ira's doing.
So we actually disconnected from agent Joanne, but I do know personally that it's unlikely that any Ira agent hasn't had a shopping-related experience, even before we launched in Wegmans or in Walgreens this week. If we can't see clearly in real time when your camera is streaming, then just like she did here, she snapped a photo, and then we have the ability to zoom in. So even if you're not super close to that item or those items, we can quickly take a picture and zoom in and tell you, you know, what's coming up in the next 10 feet so that you're getting exactly what you're looking for.
Hi, Marty. My name's Ann Donna. Anyway, I have a question. I'm trying to understand. So you use the phone, or do you have to purchase the glasses?
Great question. Glasses?
Thank you.
Great question. So basically, when you download Aira as an app on your phone and register as a guest, you're doing so for completely free, and you're using your cell phone's camera. So the Aira app will tell you when you are near or in one of those free Aira locations. So if you install the app on your phone here, there'll be a pop-up telling you that you're in a free Aira access location. So when you're registered as a guest, you haven't paid for Aira, it's on your phone, you're using your cell phone's camera. If you subscribe to Aira, then you can choose to purchase smart glasses, which would be an option that you could add to your plan later so that you could be hands-free. So basically, aira.io/plans has all of our pricing listed online. But basically, we have our guest plan, which is free, which lets you use Aira in any Aira access location. We have a $29 a month plan, which is access to Aira on your phone for 30 minutes a month. We have a $99 a month plan, which is access on your phone or via smart glasses, which is 120 minutes. And then we have a $199 plan, which is access to 300 minutes. And again, all of those plans are month to month. You're not in a long-term contract. You can get in, you can get out as you see fit, and you can change your plan up or down as frequently as you need to.
My name is Elizabeth Ann, and
so
I have two questions.
Shoot.
Is Aira in any of the Target stores, the free app? And have, if you haven't already, thought about international programs, services, sorry?
Great question. So to answer your first question, we have not launched in Target yet. I would say keep your ears and your eyes open. It may be happening soon. And I think from an international expansion standpoint, we have physically rolled out programs in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, and in the UK. When you travel to Bermuda, however you make provisions to have your cell phone work, Aira will use that same connection. So if you subscribe to our $29 per month plan, you can bring Aira anywhere. Anywhere you have data that you can make a cell phone call, you can call Aira.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Council Connection on the Talking Information Center Network. The show also airs on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can find past shows in the Council Connection archive at www.acbfma.org.
This is the time of year when we get together with family and friends to celebrate the holidays. And sometimes those gatherings get pretty big, and for some of us, they're a little bit uncomfortable. In 2012, at our spring convention, Jennifer Harnish led a panel on how to cope with group situations. And there's a lot of good information in that presentation, which might help us through the holidays even now.
So the title is Enjoying Yourself in Group Situations, What Works, What May Not, and What to Do About It. So I want to start by introducing my co-presenter, Sharon Strakowski. She's going to share about an experience that she had and her background and what prompted our discussion on what we might like to present today.
I'm Sharon Strakowski, and I am blind from birth. So we were going to have this family event, our Christmas get-together. Now, I have a loving family, people of goodwill, but when I heard that we were going to be together for 4 days, my heart plummeted and my stomach started to churn. All right? But I decided, you know, I'm going to try to do something about that this time. Because I have three sisters, their husbands, I have various and sundry nieces and nephews that were going to be there. So what I ended up doing was sending an email to my sisters, and I've never done it before, and I said in it, I'm really looking forward to being with you, but it's filling me with anxiety. And here are some things that I'd like to try to make it better for me and better for you. And it was one of the hardest emails I ever wrote. I mean, not that I thought they were going to chop my head off, but I wondered whether I'd have any response at all, which I did. So what I said to them was, many times in this chaotic group situation, I feel invisible. And especially when we're doing gift giving, I don't know who's, you know, there's somebody holding up the gift they got, and I haven't got a clue what that gift is. And one of my sisters in particular really got it. And during the gift giving, she assisted me. Another one kind of got it. The third one had so much on her own plate that it was just wasn't going to happen for her. But as a result of the conversation that we did have, there were times that I would retire from the group and gave myself permission to do that. There were also times that we as a big group divided up into smaller groups to do things together, which I thought was good for everybody, because I think being in a group of, 15 people is tough for everybody. And to be honest, there were times when I felt uncomfortable still. But also I changed my expectations a little bit in that I felt that I didn't have to be present every minute, because nobody else is present to everybody every minute anyway. And that if I just needed to take a break, or they were talking about The Bachelorette and I don't watch that show, oh well, I just don't watch that show, you know? So I felt for the first time in many years that I had a better handle on the situation. And I think the lesson that I learned from it was that nobody knew but me how churned up I was. Now they do. But equally, I had to take responsibility for my own emotions. If I felt myself kind of getting feeling invisible or whatever, I would do some mindfulness techniques. And I was not a victim in this circumstance. And I think that's really important, at least for me, in a social circumstance. You can't control all the variables, but you can control how you go into it, and you can ask people to help you with your needs. And so that's what I wanted to say, because it was a very positive experience.
Sharon, could you be a little bit more specific as to mindfulness techniques?
Well, I'm a real novice at it. But if I started feeling like I wasn't in the room, sort of like I was floating away, or that I was, that nobody knew I was there, I would focus on, oh, my feet are on the floor. My goodness, I am right here. My body's here. I'm right here. And then I could say, I am worthy, or I am enough, or whatever came into my mind. Because I think in a large crowd, especially when there's a lot of visual discussion about, this star wore these clothes and la la, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I have to reaffirm my reality, which is important too. Fortunately, we have readers in my family, so we can always talk books. And one night we went to a basketball game, which I didn't have a clue what was going on, but it didn't matter because I enjoyed watching my sister and brother-in-law scream for their daughter. And I just enjoyed being in that atmosphere. So some of it was compromise too, and not expecting that I was going to have a perfect experience or totally know what was going on all the time. All right, so that's me. So I wonder if anybody, what you think, and if anybody's been in that kind of situation. Jen is going to talk, too, about larger situations where you don't know anybody. But let's start with this for a minute. Anybody have a...
Is it Jerry who had a question? Yeah, Jerry had,
right.
Maybe
it all, right.
I have two things to mention. One, you're probably going to think I'm a real geek for, but the first one is, I remember I was sitting in a room once. I'd gone to this, it was a type of a support meeting, and I'd never been to this particular one, and it was all round tables in the room, and I found myself a seat, And there were people all around me at the mm-hmm. tables mm-hmm. chatting with each other. Nobody said a word to me. And I started building this resentment in my mind, thinking, what's wrong with these people?
I've been there, you know, that too.
Well, let me, I was thinking, these people, they ought to know enough to know that I can't make eye contact with them. And I kept thinking about that. And all of a sudden, I heard this little, still, small voice in my head that said, it's not up to them. It's up to you. And I just leaned over to the table next to me and said something to the effect of, hey, guys, my name's Jerry. I just want to introduce myself. I know you, most of you don't know me, but I just want to say hi to everybody. And, man, people started talking to me, and I started to feel like I fit in with the group. So I think I have to expect more of myself and less of other people sometimes. The second thing I want to say is that I now have a tool that I carry around with me that I sometimes call my pacifier, that I use when I'm in a situation where I'm trapped, like if I'm forced to sit at somebody's house and watch a movie that doesn't have audio descriptions and I'm bored to death, or if Elaine's gone in a store to try on clothes and I'm sitting in the mall. All I have to do is pull out my wonderful, lovely iPhone. And I think I have a right to choose how I'm going to use my time, and I have a right to choose not to be forced into being bored and being in situations that I don't enjoy. Other people can escape by looking over at the TV and watching whatever's on. I escape into my iPhone. I do it willingly and gladly, and I love it.
Interesting thing, Jerry. One of the other things I did, one night there was a movie on that there was, I knew in 5 minutes I wasn't going to get it, and people weren't going to describe it to me, not because they weren't willing, but it was just too complicated. And I chose to leave, and I had my book. And, my upbringing, my mother would have said, you do what, you're in the sighted world. You know, you do the sighted thing. Well, baloney, you know. Jen, yes.
But baloney, and now you're transitioning the mic to me?
No, I mean baloney that I have to do that.
Absolutely.
Right, okay.
Absolutely. All right. Okay. I wanted just to speak briefly to what Jerry said on the first thing, which is taking the initiative. Many of you who know me now may not believe that as of 15 years ago, I was happiest if I just sunk into a corner and watched what was going on around me. And I rarely had the nerve. I couldn't even, back in those days, look in the yellow pages and call information. That's how shy I was, how introverted I was.
Wow.
The gift to me of blindness has been forcing me out of my shell, forcing me to take the initiative, forcing me to think out of the box. And I always talk with blind individuals, especially those newly blind, that one of the assets we develop is creative problem solving and trying to figure out, not just saying, I'm leaving the room, like Jerry may have been tempted to do, but thinking, what can I do in this situation? It may not work. You learn from that. It may work, and you're thinking, bingo, that's what I'm doing the next time. And Jerry, what you did there was very interesting, because I attended a conference a couple years ago, and I'll speak to this large group event in a minute. But when I got there, there was a pre-conference on disability and psychology. It was the reason I attended the conference in the first place. One of the very first things the individual leading the seminar did, and she is an individual with a disability, a very strong advocate in the national world for universal design, universal access, as well as disability within this mental health field. And she had us group together with a few people, and there was someone in the room who went around and said, you three, so I wasn't sitting there like in church thinking, who am I going to shake hands with? And so that was an assistance as well. But what she had us do was each of us shared with the other two people what either made it difficult for us as individuals or what we may have wondered about to interact or to be a part of group situations. And I mentioned two things, which one was, I meet people or I would like to know people and I cannot find them in a large environment. Mm-hmm. And I'll stick with that one because what happened, I met three very lovely individuals in this group. The next day when I went to the breakfast, one of them appeared and he said, hello, this is John from yesterday. And, it was lovely talking with you. And, there's a buffet here. Can I give you a hand with it? And I thought, wow, this is a miracle. You know, this person, like Jerry said, had no idea that this was something I needed and something that would be helpful. And it happened again later in the day. I walked into the room with big tables, such as here, without someone like Elaine here to help find seats. And another individual, she got up from her table and said, Jennifer, we're meeting over here. Would you like to join us? And she introduced me. And this, I didn't feel singled out. I felt included. And just that small amount of disclosure. So one thing I took away from that is the need to go a little bit early so you can make connections with individuals before the event is overwhelming. And Sharon did that in her small group by communicating by email what her anxieties might have been. So I wanted to just share that. Now, someone in the audience had a comment or question?
I think one of the things I wanted to say is I think because we know what it's like to be sort of not invited into groups, or even sometimes when you try, you're still sort of excluded, or people talk to you because they might feel a little obligated because you're talking to them, but they want to move on. I would hope that one of the things we take away from that is to try not to do that to other people inadvertently or consciously. Because, I mean, I think they're, you know, we do sort of end up in groups of people that we've hung out with before or we know. And occasionally there is somebody new who's sort of sitting there or who's entered the room, and you can tell that that person might not be quite as comfortable, or they don't know as many people. So my hope is that we would then sort of take on the responsibility of reaching out to that person and pulling them into our group so that they're not the the outsider. So.
Thank you for that point, because I often this is why I brought up this issue of being new to the Bay State Council, and it's nothing against any of the individuals in the room, but I think the point of being aware, especially when we've been in that position, that there might be somebody at the table, there might be somebody who is new to, say, our given group, even in a small group situation. And thinking, let's at least say hello, let's go around the table. Even if 10 of us, we all know each other's voices and names, there's likely to be that 11th or 12th person who hasn't gotten the names down yet, who doesn't quite recognize the voices yet. And there's nothing to be hurt from going around the room or around the table and saying your name. And we do this at various other meetings. So that's a very good point.
I'd like to pick up on something that Cheryl said also, people who talk to you because they feel obligated. Sometimes I go to Chamber of Commerce events with fear and trembling, and there's always a buffet, and somebody always helps me with a buffet, gets me to a seat, and almost always leaves to go speak to somebody else, and I'm sitting at the table, and it hurts. You know, and so I thought, okay, what can I do about this? And sometimes nothing. But I have started to say, I really would like to be with some other people. So because sometimes people will sit me somewhere and assume that maybe other people will come, and maybe they will, and maybe they won't. But I bet everybody in this room has had that experience.
Yes.
One time or another,
yes.
and it's really difficult. And I think people think that they've done what they needed to do by you, you know, and that there's nothing else in common that you have to talk about. And maybe there isn't. So I just wondered if anybody had any other thoughts about how to handle that.
So I could bring up
this
that,
is, sorry.
David?
Yeah, David. Following on what Cheryl just said, I would like to recommend that at future Bay State events, the next one in November or something, people scratch their heads a little bit and think of some type of icebreaker type of exercise we could do, because I think one problem I have, and some others do too, is we do, even coming to these events, we do always sort of tend to sit with our own little cohort of people. And I'd like to get to know more people, but being as shy and retiring as I am, if somebody could help me along in some way, you know, some inventive way, we could just sort of mix it up and get to know each other a little bit more. That would be good.
And actually, what you're saying,
Yeah, musical chairs, something like that.
Musical chairs.
At the next banquet, we're going to play musical chairs so nobody sits with anybody they know.
Or on the lap of anybody they know.
Yeah.
Henderson was nice enough to point out to us yesterday.
Right.
Well, David, I think what you're giving us an example of as well is we can practice these skills in comfortable situations, such as with friends within this room. And because it also helps you build into your brain how these things work, what you might say, what you might do when you are in unfamiliar environments. One example I have of something that I'm trying to do more and more, especially when I'm going to a social event with friends or a reunion or a family event, but also in very unfamiliar situations. And I want to thank Hannah Fairbairn, who's in the room here. She has been my mentor through the Carroll Center the years that I've been involved with it for some of these ideas. The very first one is making an attempt to find out who will be at the event. Now, in a smaller event, it's maybe enough to just know names. You may be able to gather the names of every individual who will be there. Now, I actually, because I take notes on everything, I actually may type these names out. I may make a digital recording of them. And for me, that brings a lot of security because when I enter the room, I can ask the hostess, oh, I'd love to talk with Marcia, but I don't know where she is in the room. But it gives you some sense of who might be there, and that alone gives a sense of security. The other thing that I do, now, when I went to this very large conference, it's a professional conference for psychologists, I was told not only was, well, as far as they knew, the only blind individual there, but the only blind individual who'd apparently attended this event in the 12 years it had occurred.
Wow.
Now, that was an argument I had with the conference organizer, not a member of the group, but more a professional group that was helping with the organization, because I had to fight a fair amount for access to so much of the material and so much of the convention. And I said, you know, maybe blind individuals haven't attended because you aren't responsive and you aren't following the ADA regulations here. So let's continue to work together so we can make this event inviting to individuals with all disabilities. So it's something I'm continuing to do with this particular organization. But one of the things I did in this event, I think we all may recognize that mobility, getting around a larger setting is difficult. And I always commend the Bay State Conference Organizing Committee for the very detailed descriptions that are given, how to get from this place to this place, where you may find the Starbucks kiosk, because it's great to walk into a room with that same cup of Starbucks that your nine other members of your group may have. It's something, a way of fitting in, for example. But you don't have that when you're going to an event where nobody thinks that's necessary. So I went out to Seattle for this conference. I went by myself. That'll be another issue in a second. And I went a day early. Now, that meant paying a little more for my hotel room, but it actually gave me a better hotel rate. It gave me a chance to decompress. For me, traveling is a bit, you know, anxious, time change, all of that. But I made an appointment in advance with the conference, a member of the hotel, who could give me a very detailed tour. And I was very specific in advance in saying, I really need someone, a manager, who can know this description, is a very good listener. The individual they paired me with was fantastic. We spent 2 hours walking around aspects, not so much of the hotel. I use the individuals who help bring bags up to the rooms for that sort of thing and tip them very well for their services because I appreciate knowing which is the caffeinated coffee. And I don't have to bother calling into VizWiz and having the sorts of debacles happen as we brought up yesterday. So there are low-tech ways to handle these things as well. But for this conference, what I needed to know was when I exited the elevator, where were the particular rooms that I wanted to go? There were two or three that I would go to frequently, and I wanted to be able to make that walk independently because there are going to be so many ways that I'd have to be asking questions. So we practiced this a few times until I had it down, until Isaac had it down. Now, unfortunately, this was a circular hotel, and I think so linearly, and she kept saying, oh, it's slightly more to the right. No, it's, and I'm thinking, why am I not grasping this? Something about it. Finally, she described to me that it's a circular hotel, and I thought, my new request for accommodation is the conference can no longer be at a circular hotel. But again, that's unreasonable. So I managed with that situation. It was, I will say, a benefit of a guide guide dog, he got it down much more quickly than I did. But even the sounds, I could now hear the sounds of the elevator. I could hear the openness of the room that I was walking into. The layout stayed the same. And I even asked that of the conference organizer. Would the tables be the same each day in this room? How might they change? Now, this takes a lot of planning. I didn't ask all the right questions. I had no idea that the conference organizers were handing out travel mugs that you could take home. So here I was using the China mugs when, for all I knew, everybody else was using their eco-green-friendly travel mug. But it's something I found out after the fact. I called that conference organizer and I said, oh, you know what? I never received that travel mug that everyone else received. And I would so love to have that if you could mail me one. And she was she finally agreed. And I just pointed out what the challenges were there. But anyway, so getting this detailed description ahead of time when you are unfamiliar with an environment, if you at all have the time to do that, it just made me go down that first morning feeling more confident. Now, it failed in certain ways. I underestimated how loud the room would be or the building. I couldn't hear those elevators anymore. So that is when I did need to say, you know, excuse me, can you point me in the direction of the elevators? Now, in terms of working the room, I want to get to that. It does help to start with the smaller groups, like I already said. It's difficult to work the room. You don't see who's behind you. You don't see who's on the other end of the room. You can't read the name tags. I would love tactile name tags, but I'm sorry, it's probably not physically appropriate. I seek the day when an iPhone or an iDevice could serve that purpose, and I can, maybe it already exists, and I can type in, you know, I want to avoid Brian Charlson, and thank goodness it'll keep me, you know, far enough away from him. So these kinds of things would be helpful.
Hi, this is Deanne. One strategy that has worked for me is to do something that I think of as a daisy chain. So I will ask an individual to help me find someone in the room that I'm looking for, and rather than have that person assist me as I look for three or four other people, I will then ask the second person that I'm talking to if they can help me find the third person. And then I ask the third person if they will help me find the fourth person. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of work a room that way, and it sounds...
Excellent. That's
excellent.
A wonderful idea.
That's very
thank
good.
You.
Very good, Dan. Excellent.
Roz?
A lot of times I'll be in situations where there's a lot of people, like at these at work, for example, they have these big... get-togethers and meetings and things like that. And I usually find one of my good buddies, and I just ask them to tell me, a number of people who are in the room first, and then I kind of know who's there, and then I would ask, could you take me over? But I usually have, like, a really good idea of who exactly is there. And another thing that has happened that I have found is that the people in my program before vacations, et cetera, they really like to go out and celebrate that it's a vacation. And we always go to this place, and it's very, very dark in there. And I have some vision, but I don't know who is there or where to sit. And again, I'll ask my friend who I usually go with, to tell me who's there, and then I have them plop me down beside somebody that I know, and I just start talking. So I think that, you know, I think it's how your comfort level too. I'm not as shy as I once was. I know you can't believe it, but I really never raised my hand in college or high school before I went to Perkins. But now I talk, and I have the opportunity to talk and speak in front of groups and do presentations, and that in itself is a little scary, but it's less scary than it used to be. Anyways, that's it.
And Roz, the more you do it, the better. I think that's what you're showing us, is you try little bits and you build on that. I'm so much more confident for the next conference I attend because of the risks I took and because of some of the things that didn't work for me. So trying things, keep persisting at it. You will have some failures, some things that didn't feel as good, and then you'll work through some strategies. And talk with friends as you go along. What did you do?
Mm-hmm. One thing I'd like to mention, a very specific kind of situation, is a funeral. I think that if there's somebody that's very close to me who has died, that the next time that happens, I want somebody not in my family who's also grieving to be with me. Because what I found a couple times was that people were so into their own grieving that they couldn't walk around the room with me. You know, they were doing their own thing that they needed to do for themselves. I equally found that true for a wedding. One of my sisters, it was a sister, somebody got married, and I really didn't know when, yeah, it was my sister, when she was walking down the aisle, exactly. And to his credit, one of the photographers told me. And I thought, you know, I would have been excluded from that minute without him telling me that. So I think that when they're really high-charged emotional, if you could have somebody be there for you, that's a good thing.
Now, this is Jerry. I just want to add a couple of comments about this concept of having a PCA. I think we are taught that we need to be so ultra-independent, and I think that's not always true. It isn't necessary. I always tell people, I'm not out to prove anything to anybody. I know that I can do things on my own if I have to, but if there is an easier way that will help me to enjoy the event more and I can rely on someone else, I do it. Now let me tell you a quick funny story. I attended a conference in Salt Lake City last fall that had a lot of deaf-blind folks at it. So they had PCAs assigned, and they just automatically assigned one to me. And I thought it was great, and it was. And she kind of went overboard. I should have probably asked Elaine to leave the room, but I'll tell this. But she not only described the surroundings, but then she said, oh, I should describe myself to you. I'm 45, but I really look a lot younger. And
good.
And I, you know, that was, she went on to tell me what she looked like, and which was fine, you know, but.
She didn't give you her numbers, did she, Jerry?
Let's see, is Elaine still here? Did she? No, but it was kind of a funny experience because her goal was to make this as meaningful to me as possible, and she felt, well, I need to describe everything visually to him, including myself. And I don't really think she had any evil intent or anything, although maybe. But but it was a fun event, and I really found that it was a much more, I enjoyed the event more, and I got much more out of it and got more from it by having someone with me most of the time to just guide me around and so on.
And Jerry, what I think you also did is you gave that individual an opportunity to be part of an event as well and to learn from her own experience. I brought my sister to an event, and she knew nothing about blindness. You know, we hadn't been more than phone and email confidants since my vision loss had gotten to the point where, as I always say, my vision only causes me trouble as opposed to is helpful. And so she came to the event and she learned about things like audio description as I was explaining things to her, and she saw things in action. And she's now ready to take the class that's being offered to learn how to be a describer, and she'll be fabulous at that. And that would never have become a part of her life, an option to her, if I hadn't invited her to attend and be my, quote, PCA. So I think that's another thing to think about, too. By being ultra-independent, we may exclude others from our lives, our experiences that they may benefit from as well, not just by getting to know a blind person, but by participating in an exciting event, an interesting event.
So. I go on a silent retreat some years, and in one of them, it was kind of in a rugged terrain and difficult, and the retreat people offered to have... They didn't want the responsibility of guiding me, so they offered me a free pass for somebody to be with me, which was very generous. And so I asked a woman who had never been on a retreat in her life, and it was great. It was really fabulous, because when you're in a silent situation, it's much harder to say, where's the bathroom? So it really worked, and it was great. Okay.
Hi, my name is Jim Duffy. This is the first time I've spoken up this weekend. I'm going to take this in a little more of a slightly selfish direction, more of a social. Well, you talked about funerals, so I'm going to talk about wedding situations. I've got two weddings coming up this summer. And the problem I run into is, let's be honest with each other, those of us who are single, like to meet other people. There will be other single people at the wedding that I'd like to talk to, maybe dance with. I'll be attending one of these weddings with a somewhat of a close group of friends, but the other wedding I'm going to be attending with my family. Of course, with weddings, it's not as easy to bring along a friend.
Right.
I think we all know about that. We all know that. But I think the problem is, and this applies to other purely social situations that are not work, that are not professional or work related. If you're just with friends and you are, let's just say, making an appraisal, or you're just of the crowd, the value, if you're relying on someone else's eyes to help you with this, it to me, I fear, and I've experienced before, that what the feedback you receive from those other people are of their own are as sort of what is the correct word? Skewed by their own values, by their own preference, or something like, you don't want to talk to that person because she looks a certain way, or they're getting a certain vibe. When it's really when you don't know my tastes, or you just don't, you want to be able to find out things for yourself. This may not be an easy question to address in this setting, but I wanted to put that out there, and it's even something that I'd be willing to get in touch with either of you about later to talk about more in depth, but I wanted to at least put it out on the table.
Thank you for speaking up, by the way, being a newcomer, and welcome to the conference. What I will just add to that is I wouldn't assume that you couldn't bring an additional person. I mean, in that situation, you might offer to pay for the meal. That's typically the main cost to the wedding party. What I would also suggest is reaching out. You may not know the bride and groom very well, but you may know friends of theirs, you may know family members. And there's usually a great couple of singles tables at weddings where they put all the rowdy single people in the back corner because they don't want them drinking too much and affecting the wedding. Having sat at these tables before, and this is when I had vision, it's a fun experience, and it's a great opportunity to potentially meet other potential partners just from that table itself. If you're sitting at a table of couples, you're kind of out of it there.
Yeah.
So by speaking with, you know, the bride and groom may be a bit busy, but if you're communicating this through a quick email, through a phone conversation with, say, the friend or sister of the bride, you need to get kind of an in into the event, and you give them the reasons, not the sad story of you, but the positives. I really want to find someone to dance with. I love dancing. I'd love to sit with some interesting individuals who are also single, that this will make me feel like a fuller participant in your wonderful wedding. Something like that, again, Sharon's example of communicating ahead of time and thinking through what the possibilities might be.
And as far as your tastes being your tastes, just keep that in your mind, you know. That even happens, it just happens so many times with people who can see, who are wanting to be helpful, and they have their own bias, because we all do, you know. So you just have to let that be. I don't think you're going to stop that.
Or you may need to continue to say a bit, I don't know if this has happened to anyone, but you're sat next to the other individual in the group of 300 who has a disability.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
Not that that's, yeah, that's not a negative thing. I think they're well-intentioned, but and I would love to meet that person.
Sometimes
but,
it works well, yeah.
And sometimes it does, very much so. But as you're hearing options, you can say, you know, there are a number of people. Can you introduce me to, or Deanne's idea of sort of this chaining effect, asking the other individual you're sat with, you know, who have you come to meet? You know, maybe it's another man who's interested in finding partners as well, and you can scheme together this sort of thing. And so, you know, it can make it fun, and yeah.
Hello, I'm Hannah Fairbairn. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to say that one of the kind of mantras you can keep in mind, apart from all the great ideas, is that fun
usually helps to does cast out fear. So if you can find a way of kind of making things a bit fun for yourself, that's a big help. And the planning in advance, you just cannot emphasize too much, because if you get on the phone, you're just the same as the person you're talking to. And as soon as you're at the event, they are making decisions and judgments and thoughts in a very different way than we all are. So the more forward planning and the more names you have, the better. I just wanted to add a couple more minor points. One is, the larger the event, the more, and I'm going to be sort of politically incorrect and call them minders, the more minders you need. So if you're going to a 100-person wedding at which you are somewhat close to the center of things, you know, you're a close family member, I think you need 3 or 4 people who are going to keep an eye on you or stand next to you or whatever you want for, say, an hour of the wedding, and then go on, and then they can swap or something. But you don't want to have somebody with you the whole time, the same person. I mean, I would rather not. So that's one thought. And also, the larger the group, the more visual the communication of the people who can see becomes. I'm sure we all know this, that if you're at a table of 6, the communication is pretty verbal. The people introduce themselves and chat, and things are pretty verbal. But as things get bigger and bigger, people wave, they smile, they nod, they point, they do all kinds of communication that isn't verbal anymore. So, was there anything? Oh, I just had two other points. One is, there's nothing wrong with good old-fashioned "Can I join you?" as a way of sort of seeing if you can sit with some other people, and you can hear from their response whether they would like you to or not. And just the last quick point is, if you're at a largish event, if you stand at a pinch point where everybody has to come through that door.
No, that's a very good point, Hannah. Standing at a place, I would be tending to stand in the corner, but you're saying stand where you're likely to have more people come past you and join you. So thank you.
And with that, we come to the end of Council Connection for the month of December. If you have questions or comments about anything you've heard on the show, please leave us a message in the Fillmore mailbox at 773-275-6312. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, wishing you a happy holiday in whatever form you celebrate it, and inviting you to join us again when we return in January with another edition of Council Connection. Take care, and Happy New Year!